Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Leo Gabaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. For today, we're going to be talking about a topic that's become central in this era of social distancing, and that's online shopping and e-commerce, because as more people stay at home, they're going to be turning to these channels as a way to fulfill getting groceries, perhaps just getting one or two items. And you've got time, you're sitting at home, you might just want to have an impulsive buy. But today we're going to be joined by Derek Sykes, who is the commercial director for fintech player Payflex, and we're going to be talking about some of the reasons why people actually tend not to check out or actually abandon their carts online, and together with what some of the shopping behaviors have been around this time of the coronavirus. Derek, how are you?
Hey, Madiwa, thank you very much. It's awesome to be chatting to you and your listeners.
No. Thank you so much for joining us. Now, I understand from some of the information that you guys have put out that cart abandonment has become the number one pain point for every e-commerce site of any kind, with the average documented cart abandonment rate being 69.57%. And until I actually read this, I had never thought about how many items I have in my own shopping carts that I haven't actually fulfilled or just left sitting there saying that I'm going to come back to. So firstly, you know, what are you guys doing at Payflex, and how did you guys actually stumble upon these statistics?
So you talk about the average number of 69.5%. The reality is that can go as low as probably about 54%, but as high as 93%. So it's quite a big spread. And there's a lot of stuff that is influencing that. But we picked that up because as a fintech business, we're involved with a lot of retailers, over 140 retailers that we work with. So we're seeing all the transactions that are going on in their particular space, and we get a good sense of what's happening from that perspective. Our business is focused on helping consumers avoid debt and be able to still go for that impulse buy and get the stuff that they need now or want now, and pay for that over a 6-week period of time, interest-free, fees-free. There's no catch to them at the end of the day. The merchant pays a slightly higher fee, which means we're able to kind of solve one of the bigger problems in South Africa, which is helping people get away from debt and from interest.
I can imagine that at a time like, you know, Corona, all of that, your services become a bit in demand. Is that a fair assessment?
So, yes. I mean, you know, the interesting thing is, and we were talking just before we started the podcast, that, you know, since Sunday night, we've been watching our graphs like a hawk to see what's actually happening and where people are tending to go. I'd love to be able to tell you there's been this massive revolution and everyone's moved from in-store to online because they don't want to go anywhere near. But the reality is we've all seen the newspapers and we've seen the pictures of everybody in-store doing their social distancing by buying toilet paper, which protects them against getting corona, standing in a queue with 500 other people. So the reality is a little bit different. We have seen a spike in a couple of the segments, and the segments that we have seen a spike in buying right now is groceries. We haven't seen too much of a decline happen in terms of the traditional fashion retail that's online. We'd expect to see some of that coming growing, in fact, over the next little while, because the more people are stuck at home, the more people still want to buy. They don't lose that impulse that they want to get things, they want to keep themselves entertained, and we'll see that coming through. One of the other things we think we'll see a nice uplift in the online space outside of retail is actually services. So things like food delivery, things like online schooling. We were talking earlier as well, you know, my kids are now being homeschooled by the school. So they've got a Zoom call that they've got to log into every morning at 8 o'clock. The teacher gives them the work they need to do for the day. 1 o'clock, they've got a Zoom call in again. So we're going to see more and more of those kind of things coming through over the next little while.
It would be interesting at a time like this if school as an online service had been a thing before this point, how that spike would have actually been interesting one.
So I, you know, I've had that thought myself over the last couple of days, because Two things played into that. The first is that there's a school called SA Schools Online, which has been running for about 3 years now. They have a small school population at the moment relative to what you see in the normal private or public school environment, but they offer a very good curriculum and they have good results in terms of the kids coming out of there. But just, I think it was Monday morning, I received a WhatsApp from a friend who said, hang on, have a look at what Vodacom have done in terms of schooling. And they've launched an online school platform, which they're endorsing by providing free data. So the kids are able to do anything from grade R right through to grade 12. It's video lessons, workbooks, exams, etc. And it's all done effectively for free on the back of the Vodacom network. So I think what we're going to see is that people are going to realize, well, hang on, you don't have to go to these really fancy, expensive private schools. There's these good online alternatives. And I think it's going to create potentially exposure to a new form of schooling. How popular that will be, time will tell. But I do think it's something that's quite unique and exciting.
Around all of this online shopping, etc., is that debate about, you know, data prices and, you know, I can only get on, let's say you take a lot on Zando, etc., if I've got
if you got data.
If I've got data or I've got an internet connection. Do you find that has there been any effect on that?
So we keep an interesting stat. We run a daily rundown of highest purchase, number of purchase per retailer, and then we look at the times that purchases are being done. And without trying to get anybody into trouble, I can tell you for sure that it's the highest amount of traffic we see is not outside of business hours, and it's certainly not lunchtime either. So people are shopping throughout the day. Whether it's because they're bored in a meeting or because they're bored doing something else, or they have an impulse because they saw somebody wearing something and they have to have it, I don't know, but it is certainly not outside of those hours. Your question also kind of made me think of a couple of initiatives that we've seen. Access to data is one thing, but you've also got to be able to have a feature phone or a smartphone to be able to access via a cell phone network to do online shopping. And what we've seen over the last sort of 6 months is there are a number of plays by companies like Facebook, Google, and Amazon where they are looking at funding feature phones or smartphones into the market. And they'll do that through any number of different initiatives. So, you know, the big players in the online retail space are looking at ways of growing the market, whether that by putting up networks, by paying for data or sponsoring data or finding ways to get handsets into people's hands.
So this data that you guys are constantly, I guess, monitoring, collecting on a daily basis, you've got your statistics. What are you actually doing with it?
Firstly, 99% of the online retailers that are out there have access to their own data and they're seeing what's happening with their customers. So there's not really that much of a call for us to be telling the retailers what's going on because they actually know. And give you two anecdotes there. You go talk to the Takealots or the Superbalists of the world, they can tell you second by second what's happening in their business. Again, anecdotally, you go to one of our smaller merchants that is on the Payflex network. It's small business, as an example, down in Durban. They operate out of a warehouse. Let's say they manufacture a particular product. And the guy who runs that business will know just as much as the analysts at Superbalist or Takealot. The guys that are in this space, they are data hungry, they are process hungry, and they watch things like a hawk. I mean, there's some cool tech out there right now that most of these online guys use, something called Hotjar, which basically tracks every movement a mouse makes on the screen when you're there. So they know where you're looking, they know where your mouse is going, they know if they need to move an advert. All that kind of stuff comes into it. So there's only so much we can teach our retailers that we work with because they probably know a lot of it anyway. What we can help them with is broader trends. But we look at the data because it helps us understand how we can help our customers who are using our payment solutions better.
So in terms of the actual payment solution,
yep.
Have you found, I guess, greater demand?
You know, the buzzword is omnichannel, right? And that's around saying you're going to have an environment where there is a bit of everything. And, you know, we also tend to think of markets as very one-dimensional, whereas the market that we're talking about that uses retail shopping as a whole, whether it be online or bricks and mortar, is a diverse number of people. It's male and female. It's people from the age of 18 all the way, 18, it's actually people from the age of 14 all the way through to age of 70, right? And they all have different ways of trying to buy and shop. Yes, there'll be distortions based on who's the primary earners at the time. But the reality is that I don't think you're going to see one overtake the other or not replace the other. Yeah. You'll see one overtake the other in time. So I think you're going to have this continuing. You're going to see more and more online shopping happening in time because the generation that has been born never not having the internet is going to be the generation of tomorrow shopping.
Yeah.
So it's just going to become more and more pervasive. If you also have a look at some of the stats, South Africa, 2% of the market right now, or 2% of retail as a whole is online, versus 10% in countries like America, UK, and Australia. So as you can see, there's still lots of bricks and mortar retail happening, but that's also down to segment. If you take a segment like... let's think, for example, airline tickets.
Yeah.
That used to be very much a face-to-face bricks and mortar type thing, but closer to 70% of all airline tickets are now bought online. You just have to think about it. I mean, I remember a couple of years ago, I had at least two or three friends who were, airline consultants or airline salespeople. They don't exist anymore. You know, everybody just Googles it and gets the price, and they buy online. Yeah.
So you guys as Payflex, how long have you been around for? And also the technology, do you guys have your own payments platform or do you help to integrate other payments platforms, your PayPal, etc.? How does that actually work?
So Payflex is what we call a buy now, pay later business. It is a concept that started about 5.5-6 years ago in Australia. A guy by the name of Nick Molnar started a company called Afterpay. And if I tell you today, in Australia, there's around about 24 million active shoppers in that economy. 8 million of them use the buy now, pay later product. So it is an extremely popular product in Australia. In South Africa, we've been going just over 2 and a bit years now in terms of setting up the business, getting the regulatory framework sorted out, doing all the deals we needed to do in terms of creating the rails with the card companies, etc. But operationally or trading wise, we've been going just under a year now. And you know, we're just over 12,000 regular customers. We've got 140 merchants, and the business is growing quite nicely. And we think that's because of our proposition to the market. You know, South Africa is a very credit-hungry economy, and we're firmly of the belief that there's good debt and there's bad debt, and bad debt. Unfortunately, South Africans love to use debt to buy bad debt things. And we believe we're bringing a product to the market that's going to be able to help customers still attain the things that they want and they need without having to pay interest or fees.
The purchase scoring that you're doing, where is it drawing the data from?
So we'll use credit scoring agencies in South Africa for some of that information. We're also using buying behavior that we've built up through watching what happens in the market. There's also the fact that we know what you're buying that gives us a sense of the level of risk. So there's a lot of consumer behavior or human behavior elements that come into the whole process as well. So we take all of that into account.
I'm sure there must be some banking people that are listening saying to themselves, so you're letting people buy and pay in 6 weeks' time. There's no interest involved. How is this thing working?
So we do charge a slightly higher merchant fee than a typical credit card or debit card transaction. And that allows us to manage the cost of capital, the bad debts, etc.
From what you've seen, because it sounds like you guys are keeping up with a lot of stats, what tend to be the normal periods within which people, I guess, pay back the money? Have you been able to completely avoid bad debts, all of that stuff?
So we manage that very tightly. It's never totally unavoidable. There's always something that happens to a customer, lose a job, get retrenched. There's any number of things that can happen, or there's guys that try and take a chance. We manage that very closely. We obviously have a team that will follow up on payments and make sure the payments get made. But the reality is that in a fintech business, you've got to be watching the dials on a day-to-day basis. And if you're not, you're going to get caught out. So we've got a very rich data environment, so we're able to see everything that's happening on an ongoing basis, real time.
Now, some interesting research that you guys have done, which is one of the reasons why we have you guys in studios. You guys have done or gained some insights just around some of the reasons why people don't check out. And we actually started this conversation with that 69% statistic.
So there's a bit of a funnel, right? And the kind of driving force behind most of the abandonment is actually human nature. I get in trouble a lot of the time because I've got this inbuilt belief in me that humans are not naturally lazy. They want things to happen as easy as possible and as quickly as possible. And that kind of human behavior drives a large part of why we have the high abandoned cart rates. So give you a couple of prime examples. There's studies that back this up as well, but just anecdotally we can talk about it. The biggest reason people abandon carts is the process is just too expensive. So they go through and they say, right, I want this shoe, I want that. Oh my word, it's going to cost me 500 Rand to have it delivered. It's not worth it. I'll just go pick it up myself. So that's probably the biggest reason. So what you'll see is that a lot of the online retailers have built their model around making sure that the delivery cost is included in their pricing. So some guys go about it in the way of saying, well, order more than 500 Rand and then shipping is free. Others just have free shipping from start. The guys who don't have free shipping or shipping included, you tend to find those are the guys with a 90% of cart abandon rate, and the guys who included have the much lower ones. So that's the first primary reason. So the second reason is that the process is just too damn complicated to get through. I'll give you an example. My mother-in-law, she came back from a camping trip a little while ago, and she's got one of these little cooking stoves. And the cooking stove requires a little liner that goes into it that keeps it sealed while you're cooking. The only place you can get the liner is through this online camping shop. And so we had dinner, she was sitting on the computer, we had finished dinner, she was still on the computer, we started watching some TV, she was still on the computer, and eventually I looked at her and I said, Sue, what's going on? She says, I'm really struggling to get this purchase done. And then I sat with her for about 15 minutes trying to figure out how to input a credit card detail in order to complete the process. I would have given up a long time ago, except you know what it's like trying to deal with a mother-in-law. And so, I mean, that's just a simple example. And a lot of people go through that. Even if you think about the fact that you've got to now register, you've got to put in these details, those details, then you've got to do this. People lose interest very quickly in that. And they say, well, eventually they go, you know, it's actually just easy for me to drive down and pick up the whatever I wanted, wherever. The credit card declines is a big reason. So when people get to that point of putting in their detail, they've gone through the whole checkout and they put in their credit card details, yes, you get a lot of abandonment at that stage. But that's a relatively small portion compared to the process issues, the frustration issues. People also are aware of how much money they got. So people also abandon before they even get to put in their credit card because they know they don't have the cash. Don't forget, people also like to fill up their cart as much as they can, and then, well, they just know they don't have enough, so they abandon everything. So those are kind of a couple of different anecdotal reasons why people abandon their carts.
I'm trying to draw some real life comparisons between, let's say I was to walk into, let's say, Woolies, Edgar's, any one of the retailers, right, and I'm pushing a trolley, and then get to the checkout counter and just sort of park it on the side. I've seen that happening one or two times, or where you literally get to the counter, someone does some quick maths and realizes that they don't really have enough money for everything in their cart, and then that's where you find like a loaf of bread at the checkout counter, stuff like that. But to just completely abandon the entire trolley and just leave it somewhere in the shop there, I don't know.
So think about human nature again that we were talking about earlier. The amount of effort that you took to get in the car or into the taxi or into the bus to get to the store, you've walked through the store, you've expended a lot of physical effort in that process to get to the end of that, and then just, you know what, I'm just going to abandon it. There's a lot of investment that you've made as a person into that whole process. Whereas online, that investment's a lot less. So your ability to kind of say, oh, actually, I've run out of time, or yes, this is just a pain in the ass, is that much easier online. So giving up a cart online is far easier to do than to do it in the real world.
So I guess going forward, what's your outlook, for your sector around fintechs and online and e-commerce for the rest of the year?
So interoperability is definitely a challenge in the industry. Part of the reason it's taken us as long as it did for us to get to market was there are probably three main platforms for online retail. One of those is a platform that comes out of Canada. They're a crowd called Shopify. They're very similar to like the Apple environment, where everything is theirs and theirs alone. Everything has to go through an approval process, etc., etc. And so it's very difficult to get through that approval process. In fact, it's very difficult to even get hold of somebody at Shopify to have a conversation to be able to start the process. So that's quite difficult. But once you get through those three key platforms, and particularly because of where we fit into the hierarchy of payment providers, then things are almost a go. You then have the headache of now signing up the merchant into your merchant agreement so that you can do it legally. So that's where we see the headaches around interoperability. What we do also see is that there's a wide range of different choices in the fintech space at the moment for a consumer to choose from, whether it be an EFT solution, whether it be a credit card solution, there's lots of different solutions out there. Those solutions don't necessarily talk to one another because they tend to be competitors. So the interoperability between those is not necessarily required. But then the retailers themselves, the bigger retailers, have got layers and layers of complexity in terms of how their businesses work and how their businesses work between the online store, the in-store, or the bricks and mortar retail environment. So that in itself creates its own level of headache. From our perspective, do we see more of that headache going forward? Do we see more of that into the future? Yeah, I don't think that's going to go away. I think the technology platforms that people use are complicated in the first part. It's a very rare skill that is needed to manage these things on a day-to-day basis. And so it will always be complicated. Do we think that there's a big growth potential for retail online in South Africa? Absolutely. We spoke about the numbers earlier. Do we see that growing in time? Absolutely. How quickly? Sure, we'd love to say that's going to happen in the next 6 months or 9 months. I think it's going to take longer than that. I think what we're experiencing now with Corona, COVID-19, I'm not sure what name we meant to give it at the moment, but we're going to see people being enticed or forced to use online retail a little bit more, which is going to grow the adoption of that. I'm not suggesting that people are going to stop going to stores altogether. They might not do it for the next couple of weeks or the next couple of months, but people will return to that behavior in time. But we'll definitely see an uplift in online retail trade or online consumer buying in the next little while.
Okay. Last point, the education about your service.
Yes.
Where do you onboard customers, and are you actively trying to educate people about your product, or do people sort of discover what you guys are doing when they are at checkout?
No, absolutely. We're working quite hard in terms of onboarding customers, and there's two ways for us to do that. One is directly with the merchants that we work with. So we'll work with a merchant to run a campaign around a special on a product and introduce the PayFlex payment option option through that. So it might be a general campaign saying, come shop with us today. And by the way, whatever you buy can be paid for over 6 weeks, interest-free, debt-free. We're doing a lot of work in terms of those campaigns. We're doing a lot of work in terms of getting our brand out on social media through any number of different conversations similar to this. And then our website in itself does a lot of that education. Once people sign up, we've got a lot. We do communicate with them in terms of the benefits of the process, how they should be using it. We spend quite a lot of time promoting our existing merchants to our customer base to be able to say, well, hang on, today we've got a special that we've seen at this particular merchant. Do you want to have a look at it? We link them through. So there's lots of that conversation with the customer. The thing that's important for us as a business is trust, and you build that trust by delivering on what you've told the customer is there.
How many people do you have in your team?
Our business at the moment is just on 15 people. That excludes the IT team because that flexes up and down, and we do globalize our IT development. And then a big shareholder, or a 25% shareholder in our business, is a company called Zip out of Australia, and they've got a team of over 300 professionals in their environment. So we do get to access that information and their insights and some of their teams from time to time.
Have you raised any funding?
We have. We've done our second round of funding. We're going into our third round of funding now. So exciting times for us.
Okay, cool. So that's been us in conversation with Derek Sykes, who is the commercial director at fintech company PayFlex. He says they are a buy now, pay later platform, and they provide a service where you can actually go to one of your e-commerce websites, and upon checkout, you can actually, they are one of the options that's there, and you can choose to pay like a small deposit.
25%.
25%, and then after that, you have some payment options. You said like a month,
six weeks, and you pay the 75% interest free.
Yeah, and we were just having a very fascinating discussion around e-commerce, some of the trends that have been occurring right now, especially because it's become a go-to channel for a lot of South Africans who've been forced to stay indoors right now. And he's also just talking about the fact that there's a lot of there's a lot of room for growth for e-commerce, because in the rest of the world they're sitting at around 10%, but in South Africa it's still just under 2%, which means bricks and mortar is not yet dead, from what he's saying. And the other thing that I found particularly interesting was the times at which people are actually, you know, making purchasing, either purchasing decisions or making actual purchases, because it seems a lot of it is happening during working times. So that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab. On Twitter, we're #BDSpotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, wherever you choose to get your podcasted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mulio Gavasa of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.